Welcome to EHS On Tap. I'm your host, Jay Kumar, Editor-in-Chief of EHS Daily Advisor. This week, I talked to Greg Knopbusch of AT&T Consumer Field Operations about maintaining an effective safety culture throughout a large organization. And now, on to the interview.
I'm joined today by Greg Knopbusch, Principal Business Management for AT&T Consumer Field Operations National EHS staff. How's it going, Greg?
Everything is going great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. And obviously, congratulations, because last year your group won Best Overall Safety Program and Culture for our Safety Standout Award. So congratulations on that. Wanted to talk to you about, sort of a little bit more about the field operations team. But I was wondering if you could, before we start, tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do there.
Sure, absolutely. So as you mentioned, my name is Greg Knopbusch, the Principal Business Manager here for the AT&T Field Operations National EH&S organization. I also take care of our data and analytics team for that group. Our team consists of, it's quite a large team. We have our VP, Charlie Hubbard, and our Director, Larry McKinney. I believe you had the pleasure of meeting both of them. We have four regional teams of field safety managers. They're responsible for maintaining and supporting the safety culture of our field teams. We have an environmental and workplace safety team that makes sure we're meeting or exceeding all of our environmental regulations and making sure that our facilities are the safest they could possibly be. We also have a support staff that consists of course, my data and analytics team. We have a project management and program management team that supports all of our tools and equipment, processes, and M&Ps. We all work together as kind of one cohesive unit to ensure that we have consistency and speed of execution in everything that we do. I've spent my 23-year career here in AT&T, all in field operations. I began as a technician and have worked through some various different organizations with the company, but landed here in the safety organization a couple of years ago. And I can say that this is the best place to be, because it's amazing how much impact you can have on an individual or even an organizational's safety results. So very exciting time to be here.
Excellent. Let's talk about safety culture. How has the field operations team developed its safety culture? Because it is, such a huge team.
Oh, yeah. That we're, over 20,000 strong here. And it definitely is a challenge. But, we've all heard the term safety as a priority, right? That's a common one that we hear. And that's really easy to manage at a high level. But as you get down to the individual level, priorities could change. Something can happen that may distract someone, and that new priority might cause a decision that's unsafe. So by keeping safety in our day-to-day vocabulary and everything that we do, whether it's via conversation, training, activities, observations, it's safety is always on our minds and in the forefront. And this helps our employees change their mindset that safety is a core value and not just a priority. Safety then becomes a habit, and the safest option is always first for them at that point. Once an employee begins to understand and embrace that, they realize that core values are constant and guide their attitudes, their choices, and the actions with everything that they do. Bottom line, everything we do carries some level of risk, right? And how we survive is based on how we reduce the at-risk behaviors to eliminate or prevent an incident.
You mentioned you've been there over 20 years. Has it always kind of been that way in terms of the mindset about safety, or has it been more of a recent development?
Safety has always been, and I'll use the term again, the priority, right? We've always talked about safety, but really in more recent history, have we begun that shift to it becoming our core part, our core value, where safety is always at the forefront. It's always in our conversation. We probably talk less about results and, operational efficiencies, and more about safety and how we could ultimately care for each other, right? Safety is kind of a loose term, but if we talk about caring for each other, safety automatically becomes a part of that. If we care about everybody's safety and how they do throughout their day, then all automatically safety starts to become that part, becomes that core value.
Wonder if you could talk a little bit about some of the different tasks and hazards that your workers face on the job, because you've got a pretty wide range of job duties and things that your workers do.
Yeah, absolutely. When you talk about at-risk behavior, we probably have a lot, probably have more than most folks. So if you think about, you know, our individuals, they drive. They have a very, they're on the road a lot. They're in all kinds of different road conditions, whether it's, you know, highways, construction, all types of weather, right? We are a 365-day-a-year operation. So their exposure from the motor vehicle aspect is very high. Then you take into consideration that we are working in all kinds of different environments, whether it's a customer's home, whether it's a business location, whether it's outside, maybe it's in a trench in the ground, in a manhole, aerial working on a telephone pole. There are all kinds of associated hazards with each one of those, whether it's slips, trips, and falls, electrocution, confined spaces. There are quite a number of different scenarios that can happen. So, you know, our exposure to risk is, I would say, considerably high versus most. So why it is also our utmost importance to ensure that we are constantly thinking safety, and our safest option is always our first.
How are you keeping your employees engaged in safety? Because obviously I know, you know, it's the priority, but what are some examples of how you kind of, you know, get people thinking about, you know, those kinds of things?
Sure. So, I mean, you know, on top of our normal kind of, you know, top down processes, you know, and M&Ps, we also comprising what we call safety committees. Those are managers and technicians that work on projects and activities at the local level to make sure that those types of things are right for what is happening within their environment, and also keeps it, you know, local within that smaller team. Also in 2024, our technicians are going to be part of our Safety 24/7 Advocate Program, where they're going to be promoting our safety culture and philosophies at that peer-to-peer level. And we're also beginning this "And I Believe" campaign, which promotes employees making statements about their belief in how safety impacts their work and personal lives. We'll do this via video and via documentation, and these will be shared across the AT&T footprint. Additionally, we have a lot of other activities that go on. Some have what they call safety rodeos, which are kind of safety competitions. I'm sure you're familiar with all kinds of other team activities, as well as different trainings and maybe even certain processes that they might identify that need to be changed at a local level, right? They might have certain hazards or risks that are different from one place to the other. So we allow them at that field level to make those decisions themselves and try to address it. So again, you know, it's constantly keeping safety in our vernacular on a day-to-day basis.
What's the role of, you know, sort of your frontline supervisors in your safety program in terms of how they kind of, you know, get that message across to the workforce?
So we have huddles that happen on a weekly basis, and there's always a safety topic in the huddle that they are able to engage those individuals with. We also have our field observations, and those are required for our managers to go and do unannounced observations to our field technicians while they're out there in the field working. And that allows them to engage in conversations with them. They get to watch them work. They get to understand why they're making the decisions that they're making. They're identifying any opportunities and having positive conversations about that to ensure that they are exhibiting the correct behaviors and habits.
So when you, I wonder if you tell me a little bit about how you sort of, what your process is for identifying and correcting hazards that you find.
So we do it through our observations are the key component because those are documented. And we have a number of basically questions within that observation form that they can enter. We collect that information and we're able to identify where these higher levels of risk are coming from, where deviations might be coming from mostly, if there's certain action items that come up at a high level. So we've really got it down to gathering enough information where we can get it down to the granular level and identifying where those risks and hazard exists the most. And we can turn around and get that information out to everybody too, saying, hey, we're identifying risks on whatever the topic may be, you know, as you're going out there and doing your observations, or as you're engaging employees, make sure that you're looking for those habits and behaviors as well, so they don't impact you. So we're really good about quickly ingesting that, turning it around, and getting that awareness out there.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the safety onboarding process for new employees.
Sure. So our employees, they go through, we do have AT&T training program that all employees go through when they're onboarded as new hires. Obviously that consists of the technical work that they do, but a large majority of that is also focused on safety. One of the first things that they have to do is climbing. That's a pass fail. We make sure that they can safely climb before we even move on to the next thing. We also take them through defensive driving as well, how to use their foreign voltage detector to identify electrical hazards, how to use all of the PPE that they have, that they're able to test it, inspect it, and know how to use every component of it. Once they're done, even when the classroom training, when they get out to the field, we do even some additional on top of that to ensure, you know, competency in the knowledge of how to perform all these tasks safely. And then again, you know, there's continuing education that happens throughout, but a priority is always safety when they're first onboarded, and then we start to build that culture as and that core value as they exit the training classes.
What kind of metrics do you use to evaluate the success of your safety program?
We have a number of different ones. The big one, obviously, is our motor vehicle accident and personal injury rates. We look at that. But also, additionally, we're really looking at if people are able to exhibit the behaviors that we're expecting. In other words, we give them a lot of knowledge and understanding of how to do things, but can they execute? So we're really starting, and more so now than we have in the past, really starting to develop means of measure where we can identify behaviors and execution of the knowledge rather than just the knowledge. And we're doing that, again, through those field observations, through gathering as much data as we can to understand that are our managers, one, identifying if the technicians are exhibiting behaviors, and then, are the technicians exhibiting their behaviors through their actions? So we're really starting to add more and more means of measure to that rather than just looking at that standard, you know, personal injury rate, motor vehicle rate. Mm-hmm. So that's something we're really starting to move forward in 2024. And we've got a really good program out there, which we're calling the Purpose-Driven Safety Observation, which allows our managers to, so it gives our managers some tools to do some homework prior to going out there and doing their observations. So they have a good understanding of not only what's happening at the AT&T level, but also down to the individual level. So they can really hone in on what is impacting that individual the most, and they can go ahead and try to observe those specific behaviors and make sure that they're addressed and corrected. So we're really excited about that program this year.
How have employees sort of responded to all the different safety, you know, programs and measures that you guys undertake? Are people pretty like enthused about it? I mean, obviously, you know, you want to come to work and leave, you know, in one piece. So I imagine, it's appreciated that you're doing that much. You know, what are some of the feedback you're getting from folks?
The feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. You know, that shift in the culture, as I talk about caring for each other rather than just, you know, safety, 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 compliance, has really changed how the individuals receive the information. Because, you know, if it was just compliance, it just safety becomes a task. Right. At that point. And we don't want safety to become a task or a box to check. We want safety, again, to be that core value. And because they've seen that shift in us going to the core value and getting more towards caring for each other and really observing behaviors and trying to make people work the safest that they possibly can, you know, for their own selves, and having good conversations and good support, and knowing that, you know, we are there to help them, not to hurt them. That has really been noticed across the footprint. And, you know, we get overwhelming feedback on how everybody, you know, loves it. They care about their safety more because they start to really understand what involvement they have, what the real risks are, and that if they need help, somebody is there to help them. We're really happy about this shift. And, you know, it's made a huge difference.
How are you guys using predictive safety analytics?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. So, you know, a few years back, we asked the question, hey, wouldn't it be great if we could predict when a motor vehicle accident was going to occur? right? It's kind of pie in the sky question to ask. And wouldn't it be even better if we knew exactly who the individual was, when this was going to occur, right? It was like, wow, yeah, that would be really something if we can do that. So we took a look at to see what we had available to us from a data perspective and some tools, and realized that, hey, you know, with today's machine learning technology and all the data that we collect, we might actually be able to do this. So we essentially take hundreds of data points that are both internal, external, environmental, structural, behavioral. We added into this machine learning, it's called the random forest algorithm, which does all its little magic, and it identifies when an individual will be at the highest level of potential risk of an incident. We then take that output and we send it off to our field managers in the morning. And the bigger trick to this is, right, now we have this information, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
Right? Again, I said we're predicting a motor vehicle accident. Really, we're not predicting an accident. We're just predicting a window of time when the highest potential of risks exists for that individual. So how could we mitigate that risk? We do this through having a positive interaction with that individual in the morning. Think of it almost like a wellness check, right? I want to have a good conversation with you about safety to make sure that you're good for today, to bring your awareness level at its highest point I can today. If I notice anything that might be out of alignment, I can fix it at that point. If there's any distractions or something on somebody's mind, we just really want to get there. If you think about it in terms of a coach, right? Everybody who's played in a sport, they practice, they train, mm-hmm. They're watching films, they're learning all the time. But at some point it's game day, right? When you got to put all that out on the field. But when the manager gets this alert, it's basically telling them, hey, you're that coach in today's game day. Go into the locker room, have that pep talk, make sure that they got their head in the game and they can go out there and play at the best that they possibly can.
Nice. What would you say are your biggest safety related challenges right now?
Right now I'd say it's maintaining our culture. And that's really by how our employees demonstrate their personal commitment to safety, by what's rewarded and what's tolerated by others. This plays a major part in our employees' level of commitment to working safe. People will always work to the level of safety that's expected or it's allowed. So our constant vigilance by our team and those who are committed to the safety culture certainly helps us identify where those pockets are so we could address them immediately. But I'd say that's the biggest challenge. When you have that, when you have a workforce as large as ours, it's hard to keep everybody in the boat rowing in the same direction, mm-hmm. right? So we want to make sure that we have as much vigilance as we possibly can, enough people who support the culture out there so we can have that peer-to-peer when necessary. And if we identify anything that's out of alignment, we could act. But that is definitely the toughest piece.
And I imagine that, you do a fair amount of work with contractors and sort of temporary employees. How do you sort of integrate them into your sort of safety program?
Yeah, for field operations, we really don't have really any kind. We do it for some of our buried services that we have out there in some regions. We do have some contract work for that. And again, they are expected to adhere to all of our policies, practices, and procedures as well. And if we see them working unsafe, we will address it as just the same as we would with any of our employees. But fortunately, we don't have too much of that out there. In fact, I could even think of an example that happened recently where it wasn't even a contractor for AT&T. One of our employees saw a contractor I forgot what it was that they were doing, but they were working in an unsafe manner, and our employees actually stopped and had a conversation with them, which is another good highlight of how our safety culture has taken hold, that not only they're caring for themselves, they're caring for others, even if they're not part of our organization.
Awesome. Well, Greg, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. This has been great.
Oh, no, thank you for having us. We're very happy to talk about our safety culture, and hopefully we can help others do the same.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That wraps up episode 197 of EHS On Tap. You can find more information about the show and listen to on-demand episodes at ehsdailyadvisor.blr.com. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join me next time. Thank you.